Judge Hurdle will preside over that hearing. I will note for the record that Judge Reedman will be participating in that case on briefs.
Next case is Kula versus Hutchison. Counsel may approach.
Good morning, Judge Hurdle.
Good morning, Judge Bishop.
My name is Blake Johnson, and I'm appearing today on behalf of the appellants, Mark and Rennie Kula. I'd like to reserve just 1 minute for rebuttal. The transaction which gave rise to this case is a common one. Many of the people in the courtroom have probably been involved in it, a private sale of a home. And the Kulas, in the course of that transaction, did exactly what they were supposed to do. They filled out a seller's property condition disclosure statement, provided that to the Hutchisons prior to the sale of the home, and in the course of filling that out, they answered the questions to the best of their belief and knowledge. Now, the Hutchisons, the couple that purchased the home, they experienced one of the most frustrating aspects of home ownership. They got water intrusion in their basement during the spring when the rains were falling. But the district court, finding that the Kulas somehow acted fraudulently or negligently in the course of this transaction, is simply not supported by the evidence. The seller property condition disclosure statement, so keep in mind with respect to the representation claims that are being made here, that contains essentially all of the statements that the Kulas made to Hutchisons. There was really no questions asked. They didn't have conversations about the responses that were provided. The statements provided therein are the statements for purposes of this case. And notably, the evidence doesn't show that any of those statements themselves are false. They aren't inaccurate statements.
But were they full disclosure, though?
Correct, Your Honor. I think that's the question. Was there a concealment of some additional condition or defect that was known by the sellers?
Supposed to be filled out to the best of their knowledge.
Correct. Right? That's correct.
And so wasn't that the conclusion of the court, that based on the evidence that they had knowledge and failed to disclose it, so that would be in violation of the statute?
Right. The conclusion of the district court was that they had knowledge. What we are urging this court to consider is the evidence that was actually before the district court, because it doesn't support a finding that they have knowledge.
These knowledge cases are tough.
Certainly.
Your client's going to say, I didn't know. So how does one prove that? And in this case, didn't the Hutchisons put on sufficient expert testimony to show that there's no way that this water problem just started, that there was evidence of long-term water damage?
That's a good question, Judge Bishop, and certainly they did put on expert testimony, but I think if you actually look at, if you cherry-pick certain lines from the expert's testimony, certainly it looks as though he's making that conclusion. But he acknowledges that he cannot testify whether they, in fact, experienced that. He testified that water intrusion experiences will vary time to time per occurrence over the years. He testified that any house could have water intrusion in its basement if you don't take certain precautionary steps. The Kulas testified that every year what they would do would have downspout extensions attached to draw the water away from the home. If the rock and the slope away from the house had settled, they would rebuild that up. There was a piece of landscaping barrier along the back south patio that would sort of get propped up when the ground would freeze during the winter, and that would need to be tamped back down or removed to allow water to exit the patio. The expert witness for the plaintiff, Martin Home Inspections, and Jerry's Waterproofing, all upon their review of the situation, recommended the changes or the measures that the Kulas routinely took every spring to ensure that they didn't get water in the basement. And the testimony showed that the Hutchisons didn't take these precautions. When they purchased the home, they were recently married, they were going on a honeymoon, the home sat vacant for weeks at a time, they didn't really move in fully until 6 weeks after it was purchased.
Wasn't there evidence that they had water intrusion just on a 0.3 inches of rainfall?
I don't recall exactly what the amount of rainfall was, but I don't think that there's evidence from, if you look at the expert witness's testimony, his testimony doesn't say that, you know, it can depend on rate, it can depend on how much it's rained prior to that rainfall, where the groundwater table's at, and certainly if 0.3 inches of rain falls in a quick period of time and it's not directed away from the home, there's a chance that it can seep in through the foundation.
My recollection was on that particular point that the leakage was around the window, I recall.
Correct. And I think that the HULAs on the disclosure statement said, with respect to the question, are there any windows that leak, they said, we're not sure. We don't know. Was it wasn't yes, it wasn't no, it was don't know. Hutchison's never inquired into that response.
Is that full disclosure, though?
I think it was. Yes, certainly it was in this instance, because the HULAs were never aware that that window was leaking. They used that basin regularly. It was fully carpeted. There was a bed. Testimony showed that there was a bed beneath that window that the Hutchisons experienced leaking, and that HULAs' kids and grandchildren used that bed when they came over for visits. So, and ultimately the fix on the window was simply re-caulking it. And the appellees, or the Hutchisons, acknowledged that you have to do that every few years. You know, over the winter, the caulking gets bad, and it was simply a matter of re-caulking it.
So the standard here is since it was a bench trial, it's considered the same as a jury verdict, and your standard is to show a clearly erroneous decision. And I don't think you're arguing that the facts weren't correct. You're just arguing that the court didn't see it the way you wanted her to see it.
Well, Your Honor, I think there's an opportunity that the court could find that the district court judge made clear error with respect to her factual findings. But our argument is really more focused on, you know, for showing a fraud, fraudulent misrepresentation or fraudulent concealment, you have to have evidence of actual knowledge. And this court has found that circumstantial evidence is insufficient to support a finding of fraud.
But what about a failure of the statutory obligation to fill out the disclosure statement?
Again, it requires knowledge. The statutory provision, this court has found, also has a knowledge element to it. So if it's not within the actual knowledge of the seller, they can't be held liable for an omission.
And how does somebody prove that?
If you look at some of your cases, mm-hmm. Your Honor, R.J. Miller versus Harrington, Burgess versus Miller, Nelson versus Warden, Bott versus Holman, all of these cases are cited in our briefs, but you'll see throughout those cases where the court has seen evidence that the seller had a contractor that came over to do some repairs, discovered a defect, made them aware of it, and ultimately the seller didn't disclose it, and the contractor comes in and says, I told them about this. They were aware of it. Or you simply have the seller acknowledging, yeah, we saw it, but for one reason or another, they chose not to disclose it. Here you don't have that testimony. All you have is circumstantial evidence. You have the Hutchisons testifying that they experienced something, and therefore that must equate to HULAs having knowledge.
So you have an expert in this case who examined the damage and said this is not new damage, that this has to have taken place over the long term. So that is distinguishable from some of the other cases you cite, including like R.J. Miller, where there were 7 months of time that had gone by, or in the other cases where they didn't really have experts come in and examine to determine how long a period of time it would take in order to incur that kind of, you know, damage.
That's a good observation, Judge. But if you go and we've attempted to lay it out as well as we can in our brief. Brad Lauritsen, the expert, testified based his report and his testimony was based on photographs. He never viewed the house when the HULAs owned it. He only viewed it after water intrusion had occurred and been left in the basement for approximately even longer than that, months. And his testimony said, well, there are these sort of aesthetic identifiers that might show evidence of long-term intrusion. Wood was damaged, there was efflorescence on the floor, nails were rusted. But he also said the time frame for that to occur is not very long. Rusting can occur in a matter of days. Mold can occur in a matter of days. The wood damage could occur in a matter of weeks or a month or so. The efflorescence, it can arise just from the concrete being wet, but it wouldn't necessarily manifest itself with water puddling up on the floor. So I think the expert's witness's testimony taken as a whole doesn't indicate that the Kulas actually had to have experienced this. In fact, he said the opposite. He said it could have dated back to a prior owner rather than the Kulas.
So let me go back to the question of, again, how does somebody prove the prior homeowner's knowledge of problems that pre-existed the sale?
I think it has to be through direct evidence, like you see in some of the cases where a contractor has come in, went down in the crawl space and sees that the foundation is all rotting out, tells the homeowner says, I don't want to deal with it, you know. And then at trial, that contractor comes in and says, they were aware of it. There was actual knowledge of it.
But if you don't know that the contractor existed, do you see the problem here? I mean, you're suggesting you have to have somebody who was there at the time besides the homeowner who observed the damage. That isn't always going to be possible, so the expert comes in after the fact, immediately, pretty close to after the fact. This water damage was reported pretty immediately, right? So we have an expert who's saying this did not just happen. This had to have been going on for a period of time, and as Judge Pirtle alluded to, it was happening with very minimal rainfall. And so when you put all the evidence together, it would suggest that they had to have had knowledge that there was a leakage problem in the basement.
And they did have some. They disclosed that they experienced leakage in the northeast corner of the basement, had Jerry's waterproofing come out, and fixed it. But the evidence that he viewed was evidence of water intrusion that was, or was damage from water intrusion that occurred during Hutchison's ownership. So his conclusion was that, well, you know, it's likely that this home would flood if you didn't do things like direct the water away with downspout extensions, make sure the slope is maintained, and do other sort of landscaping type of fixes on this thing. So I think I would urge the court to really reconsider what the expert's full testimony demonstrates here. I see your point, Judge Bishop, but I think it's also problematic from the seller's standpoint if I, as a buyer, can go in, I sort of forget to do some of the precautionary things, I experience some damage, and then I just put it back on them and say, well, I had it happen, why wouldn't you have had it happen?
We've taken you over your time. Thank you very much. How far did we take it over? Okay, please add that to Mr. Rizzi's time, if you will. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. Your Honors, may it please the Court, my name is Doug Rudy, and I represent Charles Hutchison and Melissa Hutchison, the appellees in this matter. I'd like to pick up where the appellant's counsel left off, and that is he's urging, I think, that there has to be somebody that came forward and said the sellers admitted that they had water problems, and that's the only basis to prove knowledge by the sellers of leaking in their basement. The law is well established that circumstantial evidence can be used to establish knowledge and proof of claims. I mean, by way of analogy, if you have somebody that hears a gunshot, turns around, sees the person pointing the gun the direction of the person who's laying on the ground, and there's smoke coming from the gun, that person didn't witness the murder, but it's tantamount to actually witnessing the gun shooting the person. Okay, so that's circumstantial evidence, very strong circumstantial evidence. The evidence in this case is very strong. The plaintiffs purchased the property, and the testimony seems undisputed that immediately during any measurable rainfall, they started having leaking in the basement. And it wasn't just leaking in the northeast corner that was disclosed. It was leaking at multiple points throughout the basement, in all areas of the basement. The engineer in this case was very clear in his opinion. He was definite that this did not just happen. He said, if this had just happened, there would have had to have been a triggering event. And his review of the rainfalls, the water table, downspouts, everything, his complete review determined that there was nothing different about before the ownership and after the ownership that would be a triggering event, such that this pervasive water in the basement would suddenly happen. I think plaintiff's counsel, I'm sorry, the appellant's counsel, misquotes two key cases here. That's R.J. Miller and the Burgess case. In the R.J. Miller case, there actually was an expert in that case, but the expert who testified a year later said, I don't know what the condition of this foundation was at the time that the transaction occurred. And there was no evidence that during this 7-month time period from the time of purchase to the time that the foundation issue was noticed, that there's no evidence that the sellers would have had knowledge of this foundation issue. So R.J. Miller is substantially different. Here we have an expert that is definite that this problem would not have occurred but for a triggering event, which didn't happen. The Burgess case is also distinguishable. There you had a disclosure about a water intrusion or a water stain corner of a house just like this one. But you have a period of 5-6 months or so during the summer when obviously there would have been rain, water was then noticed about six months later. So the question in that case, there's no expert in that case. The question became, was that sufficient evidence to prove that sellers had knowledge of this water problem, or they didn't fully disclose this water problem. And the court said, no, that's not sufficient notice, sufficient evidence. So I think that the facts in this case are extremely strong in that we have an expert that is very clear in his opinion, and we also have water intrusion at multiple points during any measurable rainfall right after the move-in. So fundamentally different facts from the Burgess case. Now, the appellate's counsel also would like you to believe that the sellers had done sufficient remedial measures and that might account for the sudden water intrusion that were happening. You know, downspouts were cleared and extended. The evidence before the court was that after May, the appellees, my clients, had done every remedial measure that they could. That they had extended downspouts, they had done measures to remedy the pooling on the patio, and after all their remedial measures, the water intrusion continued until eventually Jerry's Waterproofing does the waterproofing in August, a couple months later, and at that point the water problems stop. The suggestion that some remedial measures like downspouts or addressing issues on the patio somehow would solve this water problem, that's not supported by the evidence. The evidence shows that my clients did those remedial measures, and those were not successful.
Since the Kulas did disclose that there had been some water damage in that northeast corner, wasn't it incumbent upon your clients to explore that further?
I don't think so. I think that if they said they had water intrusion and they took some remedial measures and that was all that was disclosed, you know, maybe that should trigger a reasonable person to then inquire, well, what measures did you take and what kind of water intrusion did you have? But that wasn't the disclosure here. The disclosure led my clients to believe that this was a one-off problem, okay? That it was a minor intrusion when the neighbor's sump pump malfunctioned. Okay? And the trial court found that to be not credible in the least. The trial court did not believe the seller's account for this sump pump attribution.
Well, and the neighbor pretty much contradicted that, didn't she?
She did, absolutely. She said, I never had a sump pump malfunction. In fact, I never told them, and I had a discussion with the Kulas about their water problems, and that sump pump issue never came up. So, and the court just found their credibility on that disclosure and their account for water problem just not credible. So I would, your question's well founded, but I think that this disclosure was meant to be for buyers to believe that it was a one-off minor problem and not to be concerned. It's definitely downplaying the problem.
So if the Kulas had said, speculate it was neighbors down towards some pump problem, wouldn't that align it more with our decision in Burgess? Because that, in that case, the owner speculated, I think, that it was a left-off downspout. And because he was just speculating, that should have put the buyer on notice. That's not, you know, a solid confirmation in any way of what was causing the water problem. So is it because it came off more, you know, certain in how they wrote it? Does that make a difference? And should a decision turn on that kind of language?
You do, I think you do get into gray areas. You know, what is reasonable reliance? And I think the wording of your disclosure certainly goes to reasonable reliance. I think this wording is stronger than what you're proposing. At what point does it become unreasonable to rely on the disclosure? I don't know what that line is. I will tell you, though, that this is not just an issue of, you know, the disclosure. This is an issue where we have pervasive water intrusion during any measurable rainfall immediately after my clients take possession of the property. The expert is firm that sellers would have had this problem. There was no triggering event. And in fact, he points to evidence of prior water damage. So this is not just an issue of the sellers adequately disclosing what happened in 2014, 2 years before, but this is an issue of there's strong evidence that there was water intrusion and the sellers didn't disclose it. The sellers state that they used the basement, the people were down there. They don't run from the fact that they might have not have known about this water intrusion in the basement. Their testimony is that, you know, we used it, we were down there, there was no water problem. So I'm not sure in this case solely turns on the disclosure. I think that there is a real issue here it's not just this 2014 event. It's bigger than that, according to the evidence.
Was there something about Jerry's or another company having been out during the appellant's ownership to look at an extension of a drain tile situation? Am I recalling that correctly?
Yes, you are.
And so that evidence came in, and there had been some effort to address a water issue by the extension of the exterior drain tile?
That's correct, Your Honor. Yes. And in fact, the disclosure is that a new drain system was installed in 2014, and it happened to be Jerry's that did the work. That language was misleading because a new drain system was not installed, just an extension of the existing exterior drain tile.
Is there a sump pump and pit inside the house for this for handling water intrusion?
There was, Your Honor, but the evidence showed that the sump pump was it was filling up with water, but was the feed to the sump pump was bone dry.
So it wasn't triggering.
Wasn't triggering, but I don't think that the expert's opinion is based on the sump pump not working. He's saying that there's, you know, the water intrusion is coming in between the slab of the floor and the wall from multiple points, coming in from the patio, and nothing really has changed since the change of ownership.
Can you take a minute to address your cross appeal assigned there?
Yes, Your Honor. There was no evidence that the fees in this case were unreasonable. The affidavit of my attorney's fees was admitted into evidence. Attached to that affidavit is a detailed accounting of the time. Only part of the attorney's fees were awarded, around a figure of $10,000, whereas at the time of the affidavit, I think the attorney's fees were a little more than $19,000. The judge awarded, like I said, $10,000.
Isn't that discretionary to the judge, though? And isn't our review then for an abuse of discretion?
I disagree. I think that it's discretionary as to whether the fees are reasonable. And there's the affidavit was admitted without objection. There was no finding that the fees were unreasonable. And I think under the Lowry decision, that if an affidavit is received without objection, and there's no evidence to suggest that the fees were unreasonable, that it is an abuse of discretion not to award full attorney's fees.
Thank you. Thank you. How far did we take him over? Would you like a minute and 8 seconds for rebuttal? You don't have to. I'm offering it to you. Was there any opposition evidence to the attorney's fees?
Not. The affidavit in support of the attorney's fees request was presented at the day of trial on behalf of the appellant. I requested that liability be dealt with first and that we have a subsequent hearing on the issue of attorney's fees. The judge granted that. Counsel had no objection to that. The judge granted that request. However, in her order, she then dealt with the issue of attorney's fees. So I think that if the issue is whether there was an opposition, I think it should be remanded to the district court for consideration.
You didn't raise that as a assignment of error on appeal?
No, we did not. I think if the attorney's fees issue, the amount that she awarded him, if that were to stand, that would be okay. So we did not assign it as an error, but we did respond to the cross appeal.
Is it your position that even if you had not objected or raised any opposition at the time, if an attorney submits an attorney fee affidavit, isn't it within the discretion of the trial court to decide how much to award out of the fees requested?
I do think that's, yes, it would be within the discretion.
Regardless of whether there's an objection or not.
Certainly. I could have made my objection or submitted a countering affidavit or something, Your Honor, and it would still be within the discretion of the trial court to award the fees.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will take the case under advisement. We appreciate you being here. Counsel is excused, and we adjourn for the day. Thank you very much.